Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House passes bill requiring police to report immigration status and nationality of everyone they arrest in the state of Idaho. Clinician who treats trans youth says doctors, counselors, and other health specialists were barred from testifying in person against a bill that would require reporting transgender activity to parents, putting youth at risk. House Bill 822 has now passed the House. WSU ends veterinary courses that involve students practicing surgery on live horses, and University of Idaho announces largest spring semester enrollment ever. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington State University College of Veterinary Medicine has canceled its classes that involve students doing surgery on horses while the horses are still alive. The People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, also called PETA, issued a statement last week saying it's sickening that Washington State University wants to kill 8 healthy, adoptable horses and 60 goats in pointless practice surgeries over the strong objections of students, faculty, and alumni, and even though sanctuaries are standing by to provide homes. Killing healthy animals in this way goes against the school's own animal use policy, raising serious questions about the university's oversight committee. The statement said veterinary schools across the country use humane simulation models or have students work alongside practicing veterinarians. According to the Daily News, WSU issued a statement Monday saying they are discontinuing coursework with students practicing surgery on living horses due to safety reasons because the school had received, quote, threatening and hostile communication. The statement said, given the nature of these threats and similar incidents that have occurred at other research universities, WSU has determined that we cannot safely proceed with the equine component of the surgery course this spring and will not move forward with bringing the 8 horses associated with the course to campus. PETA issued a statement yesterday which said PETA applauds Washington State University for listening to the public and canceling the laboratory that would have killed 8 healthy and adoptable horses. We stand ready to assist the university, which has pledged to reconsider future training laboratories that operate on and kill other animals, such as its goat laboratory, as many of its peer institutions have done. WSU says it had already begun the process of changing how veterinary students get surgical experience and had planned to end the equine courses during this spring's semester, but decided to end the courses early due to public outcry. WSU did not comment on the treatment of goats. Animal rights activists say the school has a similar surgical course where students operate on goats. The University of Idaho announced its spring semester enrollment is the largest ever for the school this year. The university announced in a mass email the spring enrollment is 12,213 students, an increase of about 3% over last spring. When dual credit high school students are excluded from the numbers, the total UI enrollment is up 2.5% over last year. Enrollment for the dual-credit high school students taking college courses is up 4.2% over last spring. The number of students enrolled from states participating in the Western Undergraduate Exchange, which allows out-of-state students to attend the UI with reduced tuition, was up 8.1% over last spring. The College of Law has 491 students enrolled this semester, which is nearly a 10% increase over last spring. Idaho resident undergraduate spring enrollment is up 5.2% at the UI. Graduate student enrollment is down 0.7% from last spring's numbers. UI President C. Scott Green said in a statement, "We continue to buck the national trend as students and their families seek the value of a degree from the University of Idaho." The Idaho House voted 40-30 today for a bill that would require all law enforcement agencies statewide to record and report the immigration status and nationality of everyone they arrest. The bill passed in the House despite opposition from the Idaho Sheriff's Association, the Idaho Chiefs of Police Association, and the Idaho Fraternal Order of Police. It's one of a series of anti-foreigner bills going through the legislature this year, written by former Trump administration deputy assistant and former Idaho Solicitor General Theo Wold, who is now a visiting fellow at the right-wing extremist Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation is known for writing Project 2025, which is an ongoing effort to dismantle much of the federal government and implement a right-wing Christian nationalist takeover. Republican Representative Dale Hawkins of Fernwood introduced House Bill 660 in the House Local Government Committee on Monday.
And all this bill does is ask that arrested individuals that we do, I think it calls for twice a year to be put forward, that we record how many people that we're arresting that do not have a legal immigration status in our state. We know some of it now. We know that from JFAC that we have just under 400 individuals in the state prison system, some of them being housed in county jails, which is costing the state $9 million a year. And what we need to know is how much the rest of this is costing us.
Hawkins said the bill asks law enforcement to report immigration status, but as it is written, it requires law enforcement to report. Michael Angeletta of Secure Idaho spoke in favor of the bill in committee.
We support this bill because it gives lawmakers and the public accurate statewide information while constantly respecting the operational realities of Idaho law enforcement. So let me just be clear what this bill does. The bill only applies after a lawful arrest under existing Idaho law. That means during booking, fingerprints are already submitted to federal databases, and those federal database queries are already part of the normal booking process in Idaho jails. So this bill simply ensures that immigration status and nationality, when available through those existing systems, are recorded and reported in aggregate statewide. This bill doesn't require officers to determine immigration law or make immigration judgments. It simply records what federal systems already return during booking. Idaho already establishes statewide reporting standards for things like DUI reporting, domestic violence reports, and use of force incidents. This bill follows that same model by ensuring policymakers have consistent statewide data. Right now, lawmakers are debating immigration impacts on incarceration costs, public safety, state budgets without reliable statewide information, and this bill fixes that. And I would also respectfully say this to our partners in law enforcement. This legislature has heard opposition to multiple immigration-related proposals this session, and if there are better ways to provide policymakers with accurate statewide data, we welcome those solutions. But simply opposing every proposal that asks for transparency leaves the legislature without the information it needs to make sound policy. The legislators, they cannot solve problems they're not allowed to measure. So for that reason, Secure Idaho respectfully urges a do pass recommendation.
That was Michael Angeletta of Secure Idaho. Meridian Police Chief Tracy Bastarachea, representing the Idaho Chiefs of Police Association, testified against the bill as written.
I do want to make it very clear, the Idaho Chiefs of Police Association absolutely support the enforcement of our federal immigration laws. My agency personally has recently been involved in several of those investigations, and we're happily to be involved in those because we are a state that is a rule of law. However, we do oppose HB 660 based on necessity. When we look at this, the way this bill reads, it says all law enforcement agencies shall gather the legal status as well as the nationality of anyone that they arrest. For me, as a city police agency, that would require my officers taking a lot of time off of the street to determine immigration status, as well as determine nationality of people before we book them into jail, because you're requiring us as a police agency to report that information. The other concern that I have is not only do we report that, but then if the sheriff's office is reporting the same information on those same arrestees that we're booking into the jail, are we doubling up the information? Are we getting actually good information? And then my question also is that information actually, where are we sending it? Are we just putting a report from each agency? Are we doing a statewide report? None of that is covered in this bill. And ultimately, when I look at this, the other concern that I have is, you realize that some of your constituents who are citizens are going to be asked their nationality, and it's going to create an adversarial discussion between us and them. I know, because we deal with that. They're going to say they're proud Americans, and they want to know why we want to know what their nationality is. And so are we now keeping a record of private citizens, our citizens, your constituents, along with citizens that are here in this country illegally, and now publishing that information out for the public to see? And that's really where we stand on this. I think that it is very confusing for us as a city agency, for sure, because we don't have the ability to just hold them in a holding facility while we go and we determine all of this information. And if we do that, we're doubling up the work of our agencies. And when my officers could be out actually investigating crimes and responding to calls, they're going to be burdened with administrative duties, which we, quite frankly, are trying to do as much away with as we can with our officers, so that they can be on the street participating in proactive activities.
That was Meridian Police Chief Tracy Bastarachia. Democratic Representative Steve Birch of Boise made a motion to hold the bill in committee, which would have killed it.
I don't think this bill has been sufficiently researched or vetted. I was surprised when the sponsor started his introduction of the bill saying he didn't reach out to any law enforcement agency at all, which is surprising since this is the local government committee and this bill clearly affects a local governments across the state. However, what we have heard is the Idaho Sheriff's Association, the Idaho Fraternal Order of Police, and the Idaho Chief of Police Organization have all come out in opposition of this bill. Now, you don't necessarily have to have every stakeholder agree to a bill, but when three key stakeholders make it very clear that this is not a workable bill and that the fiscal note is not accurate, I think that we have a situation, and we, as well as having process issues associated with this legislation, I think this bill is premature. I think it's very late in the process, and it should be brought back maybe next session after it's been more thoroughly researched. Clearly, just from the debate we've had and the questions we've had, there are a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of concern, especially by the people who would be affected and impacted if this became law.
That was Democratic Representative Steve Birch of Boise speaking during the House Local Government Committee hearing Monday. Birch's motion failed on an 8-7 vote, and the committee voted 8-7 to send the bill to the House floor. Before the vote today in the House, Republican Representative Britt Raybould of Rexburg said the bill is unclear at what point during the arrest process officers would be required to record immigration status. Raybould said, "I understand and appreciate the objective of what the good gentleman is trying to accomplish with this legislation, but I believe what we are setting our law enforcement up to do with the language is to fail, and to not fail because they aren't willing to comply with the law, but because we haven't been clear in the law." House Bill 660 passed in the House 40-30 today and now heads to the Senate.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You listen to the radio. You've got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial. Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening, and listening, and listening.
Fight
back. We're still here.
Radio.
Fight,
fight, fight,
fight,
fight,
fight,
fight,
fight.
A guest opinion published in the Idaho Capital Sun, written by a youth crisis professional, says a transgender outing bill the Idaho House passed last week will result in harm to transgender youth, and that youth health specialists were barred from testifying in person against the bill. Last week, the Idaho House passed House Bill 822, sponsored by Republican Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa, that would require health professionals and school officials to out transgender minors to their parents, even in cases where the parents are abusive or transphobic. The bill would allow for fines of up to $100,000 for any education entity where a health professional or school official fails to inform parents within 3 days of, quote, any request by the minor student to participate in or facilitate the social transition of the minor student, unquote. The bill states such requests would include using a different name than their legal name, including a nickname, using pronouns or titles that don't align with their sex assigned at birth, using restrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms, or overnight lodging that are meant to be used by another sex, and playing on a sports team of another sex. On March 9th, House Judiciary Rules and Administration Committee Acting Chair Representative Joe Alfieri of Coeur d'Alene only allowed 14 minutes of testimony on the bill before calling for a vote that sent the bill to the House floor for an afternoon session. Once the bill was on the floor, Republicans passed it 59-9 on a nearly party line vote. All House Democrats voted against the bill. Democratic Representative Chris Mathias of Boise said 30 people signed up to testify against the bill in committee and 10 signed up to testify in favor. Because of the testimony cutoff, no doctors or clinicians testified, and audience members walked out while shouting about the dangers of House Bill 822. Idaho State Police repeatedly removed people from the hearing who were distraught that Representative Alfieri allowed so few people to speak. Youth health professional Joe Cedars wrote in an Idaho Capital Sun commentary that the bill is already causing great harm, even though it has not yet passed in the Senate. Cedars wrote, "House bill is not a child safety measure in practice. It is an overbroad state mandate that replaces individualized, ethical, evidence-based judgment with compelled disclosure and legal threat. At its core, this bill teaches children that it may not be safe to talk honestly to trusted adults. When a young person believes that asking for help or support may prompt family conflict, punishment, or danger, they become less likely to disclose distress, less likely to seek support, and more likely to suffer in silence." Cedars continued in the op-ed writing, "When I showed up at the State House to explain this as a professional who has dedicated my life to protecting children and marginalized populations, I was turned away along with Dr. Noreen Womack, a board-certified pediatrician in Boise, Idaho, and one of the founders of the Idaho Children Are Primary. Not one Idaho clinician currently responsible for safeguarding children's well-being was allowed to testify about the devastation already caused simply by introducing this bill. If it becomes law, the harm will be irreparable. Confidentiality is not a political preference. It is foundational to effective care. Ethical standards already govern disclosure in cases of serious, foreseeable, and imminent harm. This bill overrides individualized safety assessments with a blanket rule, one that creates direct conflict with licensure obligations, therapeutic integrity, privacy standards, and evidence-based practice. The consequences are moral injury, burnout, and workforce attrition in systems already strained beyond capacity." Cedars wrote, "She is furious and heartbroken, saying she is watching people in power knowingly choose harm while the rest of us continue to hold panic, trauma, and grief that never ends." House Bill 822 is now before the state Senate.
The Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane is bringing together activists, organizers, and advocates from across the Pacific Northwest this weekend for its annual Peace and Justice Action Conference. Organizer Chantel Jackson says the group works year-round on issues including racial equity, human rights, and crisis response. She says as deportations rise in Spokane, the league is partnering with the Washington Immigrant and Solidarity Network to expand rapid response training across the state.
Also accompaniment training. So if someone wanted to volunteer to accompany people to ICE appointments, we've also partnered with orgs to bring that training. And our last rapid response training, we had over 400 people in person.
Jackson says the group also runs a peacekeeper program that trains residents in de-escalation tactics during protests and other public events. New data from the University of Washington's Center for Human Rights shows immigration enforcement surge across the Pacific Northwest late last year. From October through December 2025, federal arrests in Alaska, Oregon, and Washington climbed to nearly 2,300. A sharp rise from the fewer than 250 arrests seen in late 2024. Jackson says the conference will feature 15 sessions led by community organizers and regional leaders meant to give participants practical tools to advance justice and equity. This year's theme, From Survival to Vision, focuses on shaping a fairer future, with one session highlighting the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement.
So people will learn about what that means, and what the presenters will be asking people is, we're not trying to boycott every terrible thing that's out there, but what is one action that you can take in your day-to-day life that will help the movement along?
Jackson adds the conference will feature a keynote address and workshop by Aaron Dixon, founder of the Seattle chapter of the Black Panther Party and longtime activist for racial justice and community empowerment. For Washington News Service, I'm Danielle Smith.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly cloudy, low 47 tonight, partly sunny tomorrow, high 67, south winds 5 to 15, becoming west in the afternoon, gusts up to 25, mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 49, 20% chance of rain Friday, mostly cloudy, high 66, and Friday night, 50% chance of rain, mostly cloudy, low 42, 40% chance of rain Saturday, mainly before noon. Snow level 5,300 feet, lowering to 4,100 feet by the afternoon. Partly sunny, high 51. currently 57 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and